The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talking Monkeys, the official podcast of the TV show 12 Monkeys. I'm your host, Clark Wolf. Thank you all so much for joining us today. We have an incredible panel. I'm very excited to dive into this episode. A lot happened. First, let me introduce all of the people that we hear today. We have the co-creator and showrunner of the show, Terry Metalis.
Hello.
Hello. And then we have the one and only talented, so talented actor. He's the best in every scene, really.
Good. Why don't I believe you?
Mr. Aaron Stanford. We have the one and only Mr. Todd Stashwick. He's back.
Good day.
Thank you for coming back and joining us. And of course, we have our wonderful scribe here, Mr. Sean Tretta. Hello, sir. I'm so glad that you all are back today because we have a lot to talk about. Lots,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Lots. So let's go ahead and dive right in. We pick up this episode, Emergence. We pick it up in 2044, and Ramsey. So when last we saw Ramsey, the Red Forest was sort of taking over the forest outside of the facility. Deacon was about to murder Ramsey, and then Ramsey gets the upper hand. He saves Deacon's life, which we didn't see Deacon this episode.
He was nursing his knee.
Yeah, exactly. He was icing his knee back.
He was looking for ice in the apocalypse to put on his swollen knee.
Hanging out in Cassie's quarters.
Smelling her sweaters.
Peeing each other's toenails.
Yeah. That's what it was.
Deacon
has bright red toenails.
But Ramsey clearly made it back into the facility. So he's sitting before the panel of scientists, including Jones, and he is pissed.
Yeah, we have our biggest revelation of the episode.
This is a pretty...
Which is Ramsey has one nut.
Yes. Of all the reveals, I'm so glad you guys got it out of the way.
Right. Part of the
early.
It really is. We didn't know this before.
So writers, you know, how long did you all storyboard the
Kirk
nut
Acevedo
journey? Like what was
that's a Kirk original that he threw in there.
Volunteered.
We looked at each other and we're like, Ramsey can have one nut, I guess. I have no objection.
Look, I want you guys to explore the origin story.
Exactly.
He has notes about it. Right. Just like Amanda, all the backstory writing.
What did he trade it for?
He's got a whole
story.
The legend
In
of...
fact, if you're listening, please tweet Kirk Acevedo at
nut?
Kirk and ask
hashtag
him what happened to his
one nut, Kid Vicious.
Hashtag... One nut kid, just ask him what happened, and he'll
we may do a webisode.
We might do a webisode.
We may do it. Yeah,
great webisode.
From the point of view of the nut.
We'll bring Kirk in here. We'll do a one on one.
Yeah.
Or a one on one. Yeah.
One on
really.
One on one.
One on one on one. Exactly. All right. So. So. So we learn in this conversation that Ramsey and his solo nut have to go back. They have to go back into 1944 because the tethers are broken and we've lost our heroes in 1944. But the other thing that we figure out here, aside from this vital information that we've already discussed, is that Jones doesn't know what to do. This is kind of a theme for her character throughout the whole episode.
Yeah.
And I think we're starting to see the beginnings of it here.
Definitely.
And
we got a little taste of it last episode, but yeah, she has no idea what's going on.
Well, and I don't think there's anything scarier. You know, in the last episode, Todd sort of referred to Jones as the big dog at the facility. And I think that that's true, but there's nothing scarier when your leader starts to get nervous, right?
Yeah. And for the audience too, I mean, I think we look to Jones for the answers and she doesn't have them.
Yeah.
And she's looking to Einstein and she's looking to Hawking and they're like, I don't know. This is not quantum physics. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Use the splinter machine to go ask them.
Oh. Yeah. So.
Webisode.
Well, yeah, webisode. So yeah. Ramsey splinters back, and he arrives in 1944, and he's immediately struck by a car. That's what it was. That's what the that's what reminded me of Back to the Future. Was he hits the ground and then gets hit by a car and then wakes up in the yeah. You know, yeah, that's what we were
Mom,
talking.
Mom, is that you?
Exactly. We were talking off mic about all the Back to the Future references that we could count. That was the one.
Well, I mean, the truth is there was a whole other story, Sean. Do you remember? This is written by Richard Robbins, where actually he ended up on a military vessel heading off to war. And then got sent to...
He ended up sent to Ellis Island.
Ellis Island.
He was there in Ellis Island, and he met...
Which at the time was a camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like an internment thing. And he had... and he met a father and a son, and there was... I mean, it was really nicely written. He had this great emotional connection with the father who was, you know, saying that he would do anything for his son, and so on and so forth. And it really resonated with Ramsey.
And ultimately, we looked at it, and it was a really great story, but it didn't keep the drive up, and it would cost a lot to do the Ellis Island thing. And we were banding about, like, well, what could he jump into? Because you really wanted. And Richard Robbins was like, he could just jump in the middle of traffic, get hit by a car. And we all laughed. Uh-huh. And we were like, yeah, that's exactly what has to happen. Well, of course, you're lucky if you only get hit by a car.
Well,
be in the middle of the ocean or in a brick wall or like,
in the previous episode when Cassie, she wakes up in the middle of the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's only natural that someone would get hit by a car.
Right.
So, all right. So, but we don't spend much time in 1944 at this moment. We pop right back to 2044, and Jones is checking out the forest, right? Because obviously, things are happening, and these people have been, this person was killed right in front of her. But she figures out that it wasn't the virus that killed the people. It was this passage of time, essentially.
These anomalies, these
storms.
Exactly. Yeah.
And meanwhile, the daughters are watching, along with Jennifer, watching her investigate. Lurking in the woods. And then once again, we kind of get the impression that she says, I think in this scene, she actually even says, I don't know what's going on, which is also makes me nervous. But anyway, so, all right. So we're back in 1944. Ramsey wakes up in the hospital, not in his mother's bedroom. and we learn that he, you know, has osteoporosis in one arm, which I thought was, I didn't understand. I mean, I know that they're aging in different times and different places in their body, but can you guys talk a little bit about that one?
Well, Ramsey's like it's like a 70-year-old man at this point. Because he'd gone back and he'd lived 30 years from 1987 to, our present day.
Not all parts of him were aging consistently. We saw that in Shonen that he had this thing on his
hands.
He
has the nut of a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
One nut just vanished.
So, all right. So Ramsey realizes the date. He calls Cole at the hotel, and which was an incredible callback to the last episode.
Yeah.
I think, so as fans, I suppose we should all kind of, anytime there's something like that that pops up in an episode, should we pretty much assume that?
Definitely. Yep. There's a ton of Easter eggs in the show.
Anything weird has a purpose.
Yeah.
If we've done our job right.
Right.
Good.
But
right.
Not the one nut thing.
Yeah.
That was completely random.
Yeah.
That's going to pay off.
Or maybe there is
a
purpose.
So.
Yeah, there must be. So Ramsey calls. We have the callback to the episode. Meanwhile, back in 2044, Jones is watching the Red Forest creep in. By the way, gorgeous effect. That looked beautiful. It's just the skyline of...
the storms.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You'll see a lot more.
Yeah.
Ooh, tease.
You don't want to get caught in that.
No, sir.
That's our time clock for the season.
Is the really?
The as it consumes the world.
It's closer.
They're on a time clock. Yeah.
So they are still being watched by the daughters, of course. And I wanted to ask you guys, for our writers here, I know obviously, Jennifer repaid that debt that, Cole had earned with his kindness in previous episodes. But are we to believe that we can sort of trust the daughters for now?
Well, if you trust Jennifer, for sure.
I think there's a lot of story for Jennifer that is coming. So there's not just one or two events that informs who she is in the apocalypse now. There's many, many layers to Jennifer's life.
Yeah, it's a fun time travel thing to play another character who knows so much but can only say so much. She knows everything that's happened, especially if they've had other interactions with her. So she knows, as you'll see in episode 5, that becomes important.
So Jones asked to speak with Jennifer, and they have this conversation that it just felt to me as an audience member like these two women were not having the same conversation. Like, you know, Jennifer is obviously an eccentric character, and mm-hmm. it's hard for most people, I think, to communicate with her. You know, Cole really is very special in that way. But yeah, it just seemed like these are two women that are not communicating.
Jones is very intellectual. She's very bottom line. And Jennifer, as you will see, is a person who learns from experience. So for Jennifer, it's more than I can't just tell you the thing. You have to live it. You have to know it when the time is right. And so and not to get too far ahead of things, but it's definitely a theme that we'll see in Jennifer this season.
Mm-hmm. And so. Yeah, I really liked that line, the who is not important, it's the how, it's the why.
Exactly.
Yeah, very, very important. Let me put my notes down. All right, so back into 1944, and Ramsay arrives at the institution, and he runs into, what do I have here? The messenger. May I speak to the manager of your mental institution? No, he runs.
This is Carl Michael.
He runs into the messenger, and she is not happy to see him. And we have this great scene between Ramsay and Mantis, and where Ramsay essentially is like, "Look, I'm with you. I was always with you." And I was telling you guys before we started recording, I believed him. For a second, I really did. And I was like, oh, my God, wait a second. And then I thought about it and I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. But it was very convincing.
Well, yeah, that was the idea. I mean, again, dealing with the consequences of last season is he was with the enemy. So you should be looking at Ramsay like, you know, it's 30 years in that with them in some capacity. So it's possible that he's still in league with them in some way.
Interesting.
But
for now,
obviously his heart's with Cole and his nut.
Can you blame him?
And his nut are with Cole.
This is never going to get old.
No, never.
The title of this podcast needs just for this one just be podcast. One nut.
Well, it's emergence, the emergence of his.
Four guys, one
there
nut.
Can be only one.
So, all right. So,
four guys, one nut.
Yeah, it took you a...
funny to me.
all right, so we
trying to steer us back on course.
No, she's like herding monkeys.
Bless you.
herding monkeys is the name of this episode. So, all right, so in 1944, Jones, we see Jones, she's frustrated with her conversation with Jennifer, and she is losing it on Dr. Adler. She's losing it on all of these guys. And basically, again, she says, I don't know what to do. When you guys make the decision to push one of your characters to the brink of, you know, this utter frustration, I mean, that I don't feel like we've seen Jones in this place before.
No.
And that's kind of a bold decision to make her go that way.
It's scary when mommy doesn't have the answer.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, she, you know, Jones is what would push Jones to drink some temporally affected tea
mm-hmm.
and break on through to the other side with old Jennifer Goines.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be something huge for her to say, I'm completely out of answers. And I think that great scene with Michael Hogan too, which is like, you're an explorer, you need to go into the unknown. It was taking Jones to the next level. That, look, clearly time travel does not work the way Einstein or Hawking or any of these anybody thought it would in this world, and she has to, which makes sense, right? Because we don't know all the answers. Right. We don't know. We can't see everything in nature. We can't see everything. The new discoveries are made every day. So what would it take for her to go find those answers?
Yeah. And well, and also we're dealing with the paradoxes here, which, you know, I feel like are, because Jones knows at this point about the paradox that happened with Tommy. No, she doesn't know. So Jones doesn't know about the paradox with Tommy.
She knows
yet.
That there's a paradox back right. there. Yeah.
So that's something completely new to her mindset about time travel.
Yeah.
And you guys, when you guys are creating these timelines, I mean, I know you say they're all in your head, and I believe you. But I mean, you have to be able to communicate them as well.
I mean, it's really tough to do the clue path of things. You know, what information they have, and like, why didn't they, if they did go back, why didn't they inform themselves of what was going to happen? And it's tricky, especially like situations like Ramsey being back in time with the 12 monkeys. Like, what did he know? What was he a part of? Keeping track of all that so that we're sort of true to our own mythology, that we're not cheating. Mm-hmm. Any sort of way, and having somebody know something they shouldn't know, or keeping something a secret for a plot convenience.
Yeah, we had a lot of discussions about Ramsey, you know, the fact that he spent 30 years in the enemy. And we thought, where we came to, we thought was true to the character, which is he came back to do one thing, to make sure his kid lived. That's it. He doesn't feel good about what happened with Cole. That was just a product of him fighting for his family. So even though he was involved in an advisory capacity, you know, did he hang out with Pallid Man and mm-hmm. Olivia? Did they go to the movies on mm-hmm. Saturday nights? Probably not. You know, he probably spent a lot of time in isolation, reading and watching the world happen all over again for him. And that's a big part of the writing room. It's just sitting there for fucking hours and hours and hours. And you have to explore every avenue before you say, okay, we got to pick this one. And it's hard.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask our actors, you know, we talked about this a little bit with Aaron and Amanda on a previous episode, but, you know, you guys, first of all, you don't shoot, like, when you make television or film, chances are you're not shooting chronologically, first of all. Now you add in, on top of production schedules, you add in the fact that these timelines are all over the place. I mean, for you guys, when, you know, as Terry was saying, like, when you guys are mapping this out or dealing with that, do you even have time? Do you just have to refresh?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges is that you're learning things as they happen. You're getting new information all the time, which is very different than doing a film where you know the entire story from beginning to end and you have a chance to map it out and
shape
figure
your
out your yeah. your inner journey and where you're going to go. And with something like this, it's every episode is new information, and you get the script, you know, hopefully a few days before you start shooting, and then you just sort of have to digest all that and try to slot it in line with you know, what you've, the work you've already done.
That's also part of the job of a script supervisor. Is and we can consult them saying what scene happened just before this, because you get your sides sometimes and they'll show you the scene or they'll just be just exactly the scenes that you're shooting that day. So it's good to be able to consult the script supervisor and go, okay, this came after what? Great. So what we just shot is actually after this. Great. Got it.
Which is why I always make sure there's a writer on set.
Yes.
To because it's just... it's just the right thing to do.
It's a lot of questions, yeah.
And Todd, you know, your character hasn't, he hasn't splintered. And again, I'm not ahead of the show, so I'm going to say yet, but we, you know, I just feel like anything could happen.
Right.
But you know, for you, as you're sort of watching this stuff unfold, as Deacon is sort of uh-huh. as part of this, Does that ever play into the performance? Just kind of the idea of, yeah, we're in the apocalypse, but also what, there's time travel?
Well, that was kind of, there was even a moment when we take the facility and he walks into the room and he sees the machine. And like me as an actor, I was just, you know, you have to give yourself a thought. I'm like, I want that. You know, it was just like, that's, I don't know what that is, but I want it. But then I think when he realized it's hard enough to just live in the apocalypse. And truth be told, if if somebody could undo all the shit that he's been through in the last how many years, and we could just go back to, you know, Hyena Burger and live a nice life, he's absolutely all for that. Because
yeah.
I think he's just a survivor. And so if it could all unwind and we could have it good and life could be just easy street, that's fine with him. He has no need to hang on to a power base. He has no need. He doesn't have an ego in that respect. Mm-hmm. So he is for the mission. Because it could, if it could make things better,
sure.
As long as it doesn't mess up or make things worse for him in 2044, great. But if it can make it better, why not?
Yeah. Well, and especially as the Red Forest is creeping in.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, maybe they did make it worse. Maybe we did make it worse. Who knows?
Which will have an interesting effect on his psyche.
Mm, yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. All right. So back in 1944, a different world at war. So Ramsay arrives. One of the things I like that you guys have done so far this season is kind of like you lead the audience to think, okay, the traveler is going and we want them to jump in just in the nick of time or they're going to be able to do it. But in a couple of these instances, they haven't. They don't make it in time or necessarily prevent whatever they were sent there to prevent. And this case with Ramsay, I think, is an example where, you know, he's handcuffed by Mantis to that, you know, radiator or whatever it was. And so he's unable to go and prevent the actions that happen from happening. However, in the following scene where Cole and Cassie are being interrogated, he bursts in and saves the day, I suppose.
Yes, he does.
That scene was really fun for me to watch because it felt like everyone from, you know, Aaron from your character to Agent Gale was kind of having fun playing cops and robbers. Like, you know what I mean? It was like,
yeah. It
was like, it felt like a fun little 40s throwback to how that interrogation would go.
Right.
Did you guys talk about that all on set? Not that you hit it over the head at all, but I mean, it just felt fun, like in an old school kind of way.
It was fun. All of these, that's one of the best things about this season is going back to those periods and having fun with that nostalgia. I think that was an element. Pick any of the scenes. It definitely helps to have to be interacting with the character who was very of that time period.
Right.
I think that's maybe why you got a stronger sense of it in that scene. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It was yeah. fun for me to watch. And then so Ramsay bursts in NYPD and gets them out and so they split. But one of the things that I liked was that, you know, Ramsay and Cassie both want to go. Like they want to get out of this time. They want to just try do their best to get back to 2044. Whereas Cole says, no, we have to stay and find this messenger and finish whatever it is that we started. You know, Sean, can you talk a little bit about where that divide came? Because for us watching at home, we know Cassie hates Ramsay. Mm. And the fact that they agree on anything was surprising for me.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to the thing like we talked about last week with Jones and Ramsay together. It's like you want to have those confrontations with all the bad blood these characters have in between. You know, certainly we see like a very driven Rayleigh who's like, I'm on a mission. And Ramsay, who's a 70-year-old man, is like, stop for a second here. There's something that's actually maybe more important in this moment than what we're here to do, and that's that guy over there and sort of the dynamic we all have between each other.
Sure.
And, you know, that was the nice thing about Ramsay's character is you can give, he's got a different perspective because he's lived so much longer than some of these other people.
Yeah, I think we forget. It's easy to forget that because he doesn't look that way. Because
he's got that fade that's always just right.
That perfect fade.
And that solo nut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had to. Come on.
One day we have to do like reveal where it's like a really emotional scene between Cole and Ramsay, and Cole just takes his chain out of his shirt, and it's got Ramsay's missing nut on it. It's like, I've always got
gives
you,
it back
man.
To him.
It's going to just be fun forever. but so to your point, though, about Ramsay's other piece of anatomy, his heart of gold. You know, in that, so he places the classified ad. This is something that Jones says, look, this is how I'm going to get you guys back. You have to do this thing. He does. And he and Cassie share a drink. And this is, again, like a really cool scene, like you were just talking about. But in this scene, it's brought up that James Cole is loyal to a fault. Yeah. And that seems like an important line that kind of stood out.
It's an important sentiment for the season.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's what happened at the end of the last season, is he went back to save Ramsey. I think he would do it for Cassie. But is this always the right choice? Right.
His tragic flaw.
Yeah. Is his loyalty. So, you know, we definitely explore the season.
Well, and I like that, too, because it's something we've talked about a little on this podcast, you know, over the last couple of episodes. But, you know, the idea of fate or destiny or things
choice.
That are. Yeah, choice. Yeah. Exactly. And I love that, you know, we end season one with Cole rescuing Ramsey, even though they've had this horrible falling out or, you know, series of events. You know, he won't let him die. He can't let him die. And I kind of I love that because I think Cole, even if it is a flaw in some ways, I think it really, you know, it plays into the themes of fate and choice.
And there's a theme this season, I think, about, and this is going to be really simplistic, but it's about the quality of time. Mm-hmm. Like in a time travel show where you have a time machine and you could potentially redo anything you want, there's really an emphasis on sort of the quality of time, like the small moments, these brief interactions with people, either being like, you know, Jones and Eklund having, you know, from her perspective, you know, she has very, you know, short time to this point mm-hmm. with him, but it's already had a profound effect on her.
Yeah.
And we see how these characters may spend years and decades apart because of the time travel scenario, yet these moments between them are always very important.
Sure. And so while Ramsey and Cassie are having that drink, Cole is
One more thing that I love about that scene is that's their first scene, really, where they talk to each other. You know, they've been in a bunch of scenes where they're kind of talking
at each other,
but mostly to Cole or through other people. That's their first scene to do 4 episodes into a second season, mm-hmm. I think, is really, it's a cool moment. And that's what's fun about this season, is pairing up new people.
Sure. I mean, like we talked about with the episode where they destroy the virus, you know, and you have those 4 people, Cole, Jennifer, Cassie, and Ramsey, all stuck in the same car together.
Right.
I mean, you're right. It is. It's fun for us who have known these characters independently to see them all in the same place.
Yeah.
While they're having that moment, Cole is upstairs and he's skimming through the paper and he discovers that Mantis survived the explosion. Dun dun dum,
yeah.
Which is a big deal.
Well, she's, you know, she's got super strength.
Yep.
She's been engineered. And who else do we know who has super strength that we might have met last season?
I wonder
flowers.
It could have been. Do you want to talk about that now, or do you want to talk about it at the end?
Don't make
episode?
The joke.
Oh,
he's ready to do it.
Oh no, Todd was so excited.
I gotta take it where I can.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're still back in 1944, and Mantis is not dead, and so Gale and Cole kind of team up. And they go in. Well, yeah, because that's a great. Actually, no, I don't want to skip it. That's a great scene where Cole is at the hospital and he runs into Gale, and Gale's kind of just like, "Listen, there's something about you.
He's put it together."
Yeah,
because he's a good. He's a damn good cop. Yeah, he's just
good.
A damn good cop. But I like that he's able to go to the crazy place and be like, "I don't know if I've read too much science fiction, but this doesn't make sense." And Jay Carnes is really good at playing that character. He's just that he has such an intelligence that comes across, and he's just so much fun to write for.
So is this the start of a new friendship?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm hoping we see Gale again.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Did you, you know, you guys had not had, well, you had had that scene at the bar, Aaron, you and Gail, or Cole and Gail had had that scene at the bar, which was a lot of fun. But now you guys are having another one-on-one, but in a very, very different way. And I would imagine that it was kind of fun for you guys to maybe unpack that and... Because you guys look like you're still feeling each other out a little bit.
Yeah, it's a fun arc. They have a lot of different one-on-ones and face-offs, mm-hmm. and it starts off, you know, literally with guns drawn. Or, like, I think it starts off at the bar, actually, with him essentially, like, trying to pick a fight yep. with me, and then guns drawn, and then eventually they find their way around to being buddies and being partners on the same side. So, that was fun.
It was fun to watch, too. Mm-hmm. So the two characters go in and confront Mantis, and I liked how, you know, I liked how Cole really, really nailed it on the head and said, look, why paradox him? Like, why, what are you trying to do? You know, Cole really figures these things out, and he doesn't figure them out in a way where, as an audience member, I'm like, oh, that's convenient. Like, he really seems to put the pieces together. And I think that's, you know, for Cole, who can get into a fight and who can shoot a gun, you know, it's also really cool to see him, like, figure this stuff out.
He's a renaissance man.
Well, indeed. Well, he's also the first soldier to kind of go into this time battle. Like, he is... He's at the front lines of this stuff
yeah.
from the beginning.
He's
so,
seasoned now.
Yeah. So he has all this info.
Yeah, it's fun. It was a fun scene. But of course, Mantis isn't going to help us out at all. She jumps out of her bed. And that scene sort of ends with her saying, I'm not going to kill Cole because that's not my mission.
I cannot kill James Cole.
Yeah. That's so they're beholden to these rules.
They have rules.
I mean, that's good. Then rules.
Which goes back to why they're flipping out that Ramsay's still alive.
Yeah,
exactly.
Things need to have happened
yep.
for their plans to work.
Exactly.
And his mission or his cycle is over, right?
Right.
His cycle had ended. Not so fast. Okay, so back in 2044, Jones finally says, all right, it's time. She goes and sees Jennifer. And we have this crazy sequence. It's beautiful. It is very intricate, and a lot happens.
Yes.
So, gentlemen, would you like to...
To begin?
Yeah, where to begin? I mean,
I think everybody took a whack at this scene, like... You know, the guy at security downstairs took a whack at it. Like, it was...
It was written many, many times
yeah.
in many different ways. I mean, it's called Scene 41 to the production. So if you ever see anybody who worked on 12 Monkeys, be like, were you a part of Scene 41? and you'll see the deadness in their eyes, and they'll answer, like someone who's been to war. It took 8 months to complete.
So that's crazy.
It has... mostly because we wrote it one way, we shot it all on green screen, went into a virtual, most of it's almost entirely a virtual environment. This forest was built by folks, and Folk, the visual effects company, but also just really trying to simply tell this concept that we thought, you know, this year we knew we wanted to lean into the science fiction. We wanted to give you a big science fiction idea. We knew it was risky, so if we were going to do it, we wanted to, you know, take your hand and be let to get two of our greatest actors to take you through it. And the idea that of emergence, that's complex systems can be considered conscious, whether it's an ant colony,
mm-hmm.
Or a beehive, or a city. Some people believe cities are conscious because they're so complex. That what if a complex system like time became had a will of its own, started and because of time we evolved? What if we evolved with time?
Yeah.
And we have some sort of symbiotic relationship, at least, and we say it a couple times, at least locally in this galaxy.
Sure.
Because it's infinite. Time is infinite and goes back infinite. But it was a way of, you know, personalizing the what we're doing, and these primaries and showing how their importance in the structure of time.
I remember we were flying back from San Diego, and Amanda was reading the script on the plane, I believe, and she just like reaches across the aisle and she hands me her iPad, like to read the scene. And she's like, "You have to read this." And I just remember reading it and just going, "Holy, how are we going? Oh, wow!" It was mind blowing to just on paper. It was mind blowing, and then how they executed it visually, it matched anything that we could have seen in our mind's eye. It was pretty stunning, you guys.
I mean, A Plague is very simple. It's visual. It's easy to get. And so this was a concept, and Richard went down the rabbit hole. You know, every day he'd come in with a new book about emergence or consciousness, and it's like it became this fascinating intellectual idea. But it's like, how do you
visualize it,
show that without Jennifer also just saying, just doing the exposition of it? How can we feel that and get a sense of that, not telling too much, not telling enough? And it was a big fear for us that this is a huge concept in this season, and if it doesn't come clearly and intuitively, we're in big trouble.
And you got to do it in 3 minutes, not 10. I mean, you know, Richard, I mean, some of his original versions, they were beautifully written. These beautiful speeches about emerging consciousness, mm-hmm. and you wanted more and more of it. But when you go and shoot it, and we did, it's like a 7.5 minute scene, and you really can't do it. I remember being really scared because we shot it all on green screen. And David Grossman shot the core stuff with Jennifer and Jones, and then Chris Byrne, who is an amazing director on its own and an incredible visual artist. He was part of Hannibal and does a lot of the dream sequences on Hannibal. We came to him and be like, "Look, we have to be able to tell this story practically, with inserts of clocks and things and sand and like." This, it needs to be the impression and the feeling of time, and not just because the first version of this is very Doctor Who, of them standing in space on a green screen floating around. And I remember that it was an editor who was working on it, and we really didn't properly bring him through what it needed to be. And I remember when we first saw it, Sean and I were like, This is it, guys. So we went back at it, and we really, really took the entire season to craft it as best we could. And the visual effects are so cool.
They are. They're beautiful. Well, and also I was thinking,
and Drew Nichols cut this amazingly. Who's an amazing editor and just really cut his heart out with it, and just loved it up and. Very appreciative.
Well, it's a really complex and thorough piece. And I was thinking about, like, you know, the time is a flat circle thing from True Detective, right? You can explain those things or these heady concepts with soliloquies and incredible acting as much as you want. But at the end of the day, having that added visual that we have here in this, it makes it overwhelming, but in a good way. Like, you want to, as a viewer, I wanted to dive into this. I didn't go, "Oh my God, I don't get it. This is," you know what I mean? Like, I didn't recoil from it. I wanted to go deeper down the rabbit
hole. Also something perfect about what Emily is doing. There's delight.
Definitely.
In her performance. So old Jennifer relishes this and relishes her connection to this. And there's joy in her bringing somebody else to that realization. And so we had this beautiful, beloved tour guide in this moment.
Yeah. It's an incredible sequence. So, okay. So after Jones has her trip, in 1944, we're back, and Gail says, "Okay, I want to help you guys." This was, and we talked about this before we started rolling or recording, but the idea that you have Cole, Ramsey, Cassie, and Gail as a foursome, kind of like, you know, if even for just that moment in time,
yeah, it's cool.
It was very cool. It was very fun. And what I love, speaking of delight, what I love is, they know they're about to splinter, and they show Gail what is about to happen. They do let him in on it, and they look happy about it. Like, happy might be the wrong word, but they look like they're enjoying it. Like, it's kind of like, all right, check this shit out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an experience they've all had. They've all witnessed that thing for the first time and been blown away by it, and now they're sort of veterans, and it's old hat to them. And I think there's that, pleasure of hazing somebody, watching them experience it for the first time.
And Cole has that great joke at the before he goes about H.G. Wells.
Yeah. I think we tried a bunch of different things. There was a bunch, many different versions of it, but that.
Yeah, there
was
there was not a line there at all.
Right.
And it just didn't feel right. We were like, there's got to be some sort of a button here, and we did a bunch of different.
I think it was more. There was a line, but it was like earnest. It was like, "Hope I see you again," or "See you soon." It was something very like there was something earnest about it, and then ultimately it just felt like a moment of wonder. You know, and a great moment for Cole to smile and embrace the concept of it all, of how crazy it is, and then calling back H.G. Wells is perfect. Yeah.
And once again, I love the idea of, you know, when Cassie arrived, you know, in the previous episode, and Cole says to her, "Have a little fun," and, you know, yeah, and he smiles in this moment, and it's,
when Cole smiles, it really is effective.
It warms the world.
It does. Your smile makes the world go round.
You hear the angels sing, indeed. All right, so with that, it's a really fun moment, and they splinter back to 2044, which is not a very fun moment because they are mad at each other. Like, everybody is just over it.
They're at odds. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just at their end of their ropes, which I don't blame them because, look, I mean, they figure out what the 12 monkeys are doing. They're trying to destroy time.
Yeah.
Failed their mission.
Yes.
They've been through a lot. They're cranky. Time travel jet lag is a bitch. You know.
It's not as nosebleedy this season.
Yeah. That's true. Not as nosebleedy.
Cocktail's been tweaked.
That's
not
right.
Not yet. Adler says it's a better cocktail. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, and also, you know, the question of how many primaries will need to be destroyed to collapse time. And why do they want to destroy time?
Well, that's a good question.
All of these big questions.
And you'll get answers to all those.
Will I?
Yes,
and more.
Promise,
and more, and more. No, but that scene was again a testament to our very fine actors.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to pull that scene off. You know, I remember when I had finished my pass, I added that scene of them arguing, and then Cole stepping up as leader and pulling them together. And it's one of those things that you look at on paper and you can read it the bad way, mm-hmm. or you can read it the good way. And you just have a leap of faith that, and you believe in your people. Are like, we're going to pull this off. And it did. It worked. It was great. And the fight felt organic. And Cole stepping in and pulling them together. And Trevor Raven wrote a great piece that's subtle but sort of inspirational behind it. And then it's wrapped up really nicely by going to Gale and leaving the photo in Suite 607 and writing the thing. I'm pretty proud of. It's almost like weirdly like a season finale.
Yeah. Aaron, we've been talking this season about Cole is a little bit more optimistic this season, and you know, but stepping in, you know, they are all so frustrated with each other. They've all been through a hell of a lot just now. I'm just kind of curious, like, for you as the person who embodies Cole, like, how does he sort of find it within himself to go, no, I have to step up and do this, even though he's probably equally as frustrated as all of these people?
Well, I think in that moment, you know, and leading up to that, he's beginning to be aware that the ship doesn't actually have a captain. Mm-hmm. You know, there's Jones, but her faith in everything has been shaken, and everyone seems to have a different idea of how to go about things, and I think he realizes in that moment that there's a void and somebody has to fill it, and mm-hmm. it's got to be him.
And I like that we sort of end that scene where it's not like they all shake hands and high five and go, okay guys, let's get back out there. Like, we kind of just end the scene.
Yeah. I mean, it's everybody realizing essentially that there's a common enemy.
Right.
And they have to band together, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And so we're back to 1944, where Gale marks the photo and leaves it on the desk. And then we go forward to 1971, where Mantis is on her deathbed. And she has a son. She, as she told Ramsey earlier in the episode, like, this is something I want to do, and she does. And Who is her son? Question mark, question mark, question mark. OMG, you guys. Right. It's the Wilson. So we see Tom Noonan. Man, scary, awesome, very
and,
cool.
And like
Noonan.
His mom, he survived a paradox.
He sure did.
Yep.
What I love about that moment, and my wife and I watched that scene together, and we realized that he was instrumental in helping Olivia raise the babies so that they could grow up and be messengers so that she could go back in time and give birth to him.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
That's great.
Yeah. It blows my mind. Just exploded. Yeah. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So he's back and not happy, I'm assuming.
He has a purpose as well. He's got a mission.
He's got a brow to pick.
Yeah.
He sure does. He sure does. So, for our, so will we be seeing more from him?
You will
this
most
season?
Definitely be seeing more immediately in the next episode.
I love it. I love it. This was a good This was a great episode. There was so much that happened. I can't believe we're only 4 episodes in. Like when I was so. The reason that Terry and I got in contact was because I was writing recaps on Nerdist.com for the show. And I would have to watch every episode twice in order to recap it in a coherent way.
Sorry.
And not be like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then. But it's just like, it's such an adventure in every episode. You guys pack so much into those 45 minutes. It's pretty...
Yeah, we do. We burn
a lot of story.
It's a lot. We burn a lot of story quick. Wait till you see.
Lots and lots of stories still to come.
Just
this
get season. Yeah, there's a lot. You wouldn't even, I like to think about the season finale, like where we start and where we end up is.
Sean's just shaking his head.
It's really is so much fun just working on it because you have these great, fun, colorful characters like, Deacon and Jones and Jennifer and so on and so forth. But like ultimately it's Cole and Cassie's story. And that's always the most rewarding stuff to write about. We may take it for granted from time to time, but it's their story and
why are you hitting him cash right now, Aaron? Yeah.
It is. I mean, and I think it's also important to that they're not together all the time. I think there's a version of the show in which every episode Cole and Cassie are on a mission together, Scully and Mulder.
Sure.
But I don't think you would want them to, like, the moments where they are together wouldn't be as special, I think.
You have to draw the arrow back.
Yeah, exactly. I like that, yeah.
Yes, I agree. As a fan, I agree.
And we get new pair-ups. Next episode has some unlikely partnerships and a great Deacon story.
Yeah, can without spoiling anything, can you preview what we can look forward to, Todd?
I mean, Deacon's awesome.
I mean,
no, I remember just, and we could talk about it on the next podcast, but there was a moment where Terry walks up to me and goes, "No, I think you called me." You go, "You are going to love me. You are going to love me so much. We just came up with it." And he sort of lays out this storyline. I'm like, yeah, I love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it functions in a very important way as far as the dynamic of where we go, where we've come from and how we move forward.
So again, it's about, you have to deal with the reality of Deacon being in this facility.
Sure.
And we definitely do next episode. And then there's a very big Cassie story next episode with Jennifer Goins. Yeah. Thelma
Doing
Louise with Cassie and Jennifer.
Yeah. I love it. Well, this is great.
Well, thank you.
I feel
thank
good.
You.
Thank you.
I feel good. So, guys, do you want to tell everybody where they can find you on social media?
Yes, I am at Aaron A. Stanford on Twitter.
I am at Todd Stashwick on Twitter.
Sean, where can the people find you?
At Sean_Tretta.
Wonderful. Terry?
I am at Terry Metallis, and I'm just making sure I get Kirk's
yes.
proper
this
Twitter.
This is your, all right.
It is at Kirk Acevedo. Ask him about his one nut and what inspired him to
and
say
what,
that.
Where, what is the backstory?
What is the backstory?
And will there be a webisode?
Are there photos? No, don't ask for photos. He will share photos.
Yes. I got photos.
So this is your mission. This is your mission, 12 Monkeys, friends. So tweet at Kirk. And and you can find me on social media at Clark Wolf. Clark with an E, Wolf with an E. And if you enjoyed this podcast and all of our very behind-the-scenes details that we revealed, be sure to subscribe. Wherever you're listening, be sure to subscribe. Rate and review on iTunes so more people find out about the show. And for more about 12 Monkeys, visit sci-fi.com. That's it for now. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.